This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
You're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 283, Puss in Boots, The Last Wish, Ethical Bug. Welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, the number one place to get your animation fix with animation addicts just like you. Each episode, we dive into the wonderful world of animation featuring Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, and everything in between. From hilarious discussions and movie reviews to interviews with industry insiders, this show's mission is to brighten your day through our love of animation. So hop on your nerdy couch, grab some snacks, and get ready to hang out with your animation besties because it's time to dive into today's episode. Hey there, animation addicts. I'm Morgan Stradling.
And I am Chelsea Robson.
And we are here to talk about the Puss in Boots.
It's a brand new year. Look at us go.
We're talking back about a movie from last year. Starting it off right, you know?
But this was actually, I think this was the last movie that came out last year. So yes. I feel like I'm okay with that. At least I'm still,
I mean, it was going right into Christmas break and we took some time off. And so it gave us time to see this movie, digest it, and have some thoughts on the movie, as well as audience reaction, how other people are thinking about this. This has been an interesting one to watch indeed.
For sure. So stick around and we will be right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Who is your favorite fearless hero? Who is your favorite fearless hero? Who's brave and ready for trouble?
All right, so before we talk about the movie, let's set the stage. The studio, DreamWorks Animation, the director was Joel Crawford, who has directed quite a few things for DreamWorks. Most recently, he directed the Croods sequel, The Croods: A New Age, just a few years ago. And I did not see that one, but I've actually heard it's pretty good. And the release date, December 21st, 2022, a $90 million budget, which, can we just sit on that for a moment? I mean, considering some of these Disney movies we've been talking about, they're in the 150, 175 range. I feel like Disney's, Pixar's, they hover around this 175 mark. So for this to come in basically half that, pretty impressive. Good on DreamWorks for keeping their costs low. And then finally, you know, what we all have been waiting for, how did it make money? Did it make back its budget? That's the age-old question that I always have, and it made $251.1 million in the worldwide box office thus far. So this is mid-January when we are recording this, so it's been out just less than a month and done pretty well, all things considered.
Yeah, you know, this has been kind of an underwhelming movie season. Let's go through and reasons why you may not have seen this movie already. One, you just weren't going to the movies. Mm-hmm. That's a big one. There's those people who just were like, I just don't want to go. And honestly, that's when a lot of the movies were coming out over Christmas. It was like all of them just seemed very underwhelming to me. And I was just like, ugh, I got stuff to do, you know? Mm-hmm. And so there's that. And then also looking at it as this is the sequel to a movie that probably a lot of people never saw as well.
Well, let's just not talk about, it's not only a sequel, it's kind of a spinoff to an already very well established and maybe slightly overdone series at this point. This is the sixth Shrek franchise film, if you will. So, I mean, if you were kind of over Shrek, you know, maybe during Shrek 3 in 2007 or even when Shrek 4 came out and you've kind of said, no, I don't do that anymore.
I quit.
You know, I could see how you didn't end up seeing this one. I personally, to give some context and for my review, you know, didn't see the first Puss in Boots film. You know, but I went into this one and I didn't feel that you needed to see it at all.
Right. I did see the first Puss in Boots film, but I was very underwhelmed. Mm-hmm. Like very much so. I just remember we got the art book for it and I had been blown away by the art book. Mm-hmm. But then I went in and actually watched Puss in Boots and I was like, oh my gosh, this is so boring. That's all I remember. I mean, if I were to go back, I wonder if I'd still, if, you know, if that's how I would still feel. Cause I'm like, I don't even remember what it was about. I know you had the egg and, you know, all the king's horses and all the king's men. Like, I don't, there's something about this whole thing. And I'm just like, I don't even know.
Well, so what made you want to go see this one after the fact? I mean, you already been kind of underwhelmed for the first one. You know, why did you rush, or not rush, but why did you end up seeing the sequel? Cause this wasn't on our list. It's one that I ended up seeing. We had a press screening for it due to scheduling conflicts. I had an orchestra concert that I perform in. I wasn't able to do it. Chelsea wasn't able to do it. I ended up taking my kids during Christmas break as a way, just something fun to do. And then you ended up seeing it just recently.
Yeah. So I was supposed to go to the press screening as well, but then I had some family stuff come up last minute, so I wasn't able to do it. And then I saw a lot of people on our Facebook patron group that were like, yo, this movie was amazing. And I was like, wow, okay. And then some other people from my church were going to go. And so I was like, all right, I shall go as well. So I grabbed Marissa and I said, let's go.
So first and foremost, everyone has been raving about this movie. I've seen, you know, reviews and videos saying this is the best movie. Everyone needs to go see it. And I didn't necessarily feel that way when I saw it. The whole patron group loved this. Reviews online are, you know, ecstatic for this movie. Everyone seems to love it. It's great. I went in and I thought it was good, but I didn't feel blown away like all of the reviews, I guess, that I had seen. So I'm wondering, like, what's wrong with me? I will say that
Are you a commoner, Morgan?
I think my viewing experience was maybe tainted a bit. I was really into it, but about an hour into it, my soon-to-be two-year-old wasn't quite so much. So I ended up having to be, you know, chase him up and down the aisles, and there were other people there. So we had to kind of like leave for a good portion of it, and I was kind of in and out, and I was able to, you know, catch what. By that point, the plot had definitely progressed, where I was able to understand what was going on and where this was all leading, but. Nonetheless, even that first like 60 minutes that I saw, well, I mean, it was longer than an hour and a half movie. That was another thing. But yeah, at least that first half that I saw I very much liked, but wasn't totally blown away. So we'll talk about it.
For me, I went out and like right before bed last night, knowing that we would do this whole thing, I went and I tried to write down almost all the plot points of this movie. And I got so tired after a while. So I was like, there was a lot of steps that had to go into this. And to start out from just Puss in Boots to going from, okay, now he's on his last life and now building up the stakes and showing now that death is coming in, even though he thinks he's just a bounty hunter. If I were to give any critiques about this, it would just be that I was like, it was really slow move. There were a lot of steps. There was just a lot of things that happened.
Uh-huh.
That's one of the things. It starts out with, you have this intro, which I think Since Disney redid their intro and we talked about it, I think we should talk about the DreamWorks intro. Ooh. It's basically a, if you haven't seen these movies, you should. And I tend to agree. So it goes, it starts off and it goes through this, like, you know, the fisherman boy. He goes through it.
The fisherman.
It starts off where you see, like, bad guys, and then you see all of the movie, not all of the movies, but, like, a bunch of the movies going back, all of their flagship people, characters. And what were your thoughts on that? You think it was just too much? Or
I do think it was too much. It was like, okay, you got these franchises, you got Trolls, you got Shrek, you got this, and it just felt off to me. Like, it was very, you know, like, the Disney one has these just subtle, you know, like, moments that you recognize from other films, but it doesn't totally distract you. Like, it makes, it kind of takes me out of the moment where I'm like, oh yeah, Kung Fu Panda, Shrek, this, that, you know, where it's just like, I didn't need that. Like, I don't need you to remind me about all your other films and disrupt my viewing experience as I'm getting into the new movie. Like, I want to be set up for the new movie. So that's why I like the intros where they basically, you know, it's the same, you know, he throws the fishing line and it goes down, and sometimes they adapt it to the style, or, you know, if it's like a haunted thing, it's like a spooky vibe or whatever, you know, where it just subtly it's converted to fit the movie I am watching,
to prepare
the scene. And this one, like, took it out. It was like, oh yeah, DreamWorks Land coming soon. That's kind of what it felt like to me. Like, oh yeah, look at all these cool things we have.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it might be just a, because DreamWorks tends to get forgotten about, especially when you're comparing it to Disney. And I look back, and last year, the top movies on my list were DreamWorks.
Yeah,
as far as the things that came out, like, there wasn't much better movies that I'm just like, wow. Bad Guys was really high on my
pretty
list.
Pretty recent.
Yeah. And it was pretty recent, but, like, you kind of end up forgetting about them. And so I think that's a good thing that they brought them back. They're like, hey, remember us? we have good stuff. You should like us. Remember? That is something that I'm excited this year. We haven't really discussed this, but I feel like we should go through and do a lot more DreamWorks countdowns.
Oh, all right.
Focus more on them. Because I feel like those are...
They get kind of lost in the shuffle somehow, even though they're a very large studio with quite the catalog of films.
Yes.
All right. So let's get into it. You know, this movie's interesting because, you know Puss as far as what he is. Even if you don't know him too much, you don't need the full introduction of, like, how he got his boots or anything about his backstory. Here's a cat. He wears boots. He has a hat. He has a little accent, and he fights bad guys. Cool. Move on. And I think that alone, whether you're familiar with even the fairy tale or him from Shrek 2 and other Shrek films, or even the first one, isn't necessary, which is great for this movie. You know, you want it to be standalone. You want people to just come and enjoy it and just hear, hey, this is a great movie. Go see it. It's just a movie with a character, you know? So I thought that was good that he is strong enough for a character on his own that he doesn't need all of this backstory. Now, we do learn, you know, a little bit more about him as we go on, but, you know, we jump right into it. We jump into the action scene, which is fun.
Yeah. And I think they did a good job with basically at the very beginning, it says, this story is a fairy tale. And it just basically cuts off, like, it's fine. I know you haven't seen the other ones, or you don't really remember anything. It's fine. We're just starting brand new, brand new, fresh. You don't need to know anything.
Yeah.
And then go straight into Intro to the Star. And the legendary Puss in Boots. And he's got his own theme song and everything.
Yeah, that was funny.
He's making an appearance, or I didn't quite understand, like, what the, like, okay, he's a thief. And so he's just doing a gathering at the governor's mansion without the government knowing. I was like, what?
Yeah.
Okay.
He was just there. Whatever. There's a big party. There's a lot of people. Allows for a lot of commotion to happen.
He stepped on my face, and we should never wash it again. I'd like to talk about the animation styling, like, at the first, just because I felt like it was very pretty. And like when I watched the, or when I was looking at the first animation art book, I was just so drawn in to the animation style in the Puss in Boots art book. And this one was the same thing. And you're looking at the people and how they're animated, and they definitely tried not to do it as a perfection. Everyone still had kind of like an oil painting look, like somebody just went in and overlaid an oil painting on top of this whole thing.
Yeah. There's definitely two main things that stand out to me about the animation. The one is just the general art style, where it's definitely more painterly. We're kind of moving away from this, but not even photorealism, but just kind of this, it's kind of like cartoony photorealism, like if that makes sense. Like,
yeah.
Disney and DreamWorks for a while, like they kept trying to push the technology in the 2000s and 2010s to get it as close to real life, I guess, as possible, you know, while still kind of having a little bit of cartooniness to it. You know,
yeah.
You have Disney with the big eyes and characters, and they definitely have that Disney look, but you know, they want you to really feel this world, like feel the snow and oh my gosh, the water, it looks so real. And I think the big moment in animation that changed this was Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. It really changed the game, where it made people realize we don't have to do that. You know, they had this comic book art style, this, you know, the way that the action scenes and certain scenes were done, where it they remove frames mm-hmm. from it, where it seems like a little bit more choppy versus the smooth, realistic. And that movie did so well, and just, I think, had such an impact on the industry. We see that here in Puss in Boots. And, you know, we also see it in The Bad Guys. The Bad Guys had a lot of that as well.
Uh-huh.
You know, that movie just totally changed the game for animation, because now people are copying it. Like, I see that style and I think Spider-Verse,
right?
Which is fine, but not really, because it kind of makes you feel like you're more of a copycat following a trend, like a very prominent trend, versus, you know, creating one. But, mm-hmm. you know, that's what audiences like right now. And it's really cool and it's different. We really only saw it for action scenes in this movie. It wasn't 100% of the time we were seeing this like choppy frame rate, you know, comic book action style. But when we did, it helped break things up and make it really cool. So we do see it at the very beginning during that fight. And then we see it throughout, you know, as different fights progress. But then, you know, when there's more of these softer moments, you know, when they're in the cat refuge, they don't constantly have you with that, which I think was good, because I think it can kind of be sensory overload, because those frames are removed, where it's very jarring and you kind of have to focus and pay attention. And it's just not what our eyes are used to. So it's good and bad for all those reasons.
Yeah. Well, and when you compare it with Bad Guys felt a lot more comic booky,
which is what it was based on.
Right. And this one, the oil painting styling, I mean, I really liked it. And I think, or are they just trying to do it as because it is a fairy tale? Does oil painting go in with fairy tales? Maybe. Yeah.
I mean, I think so. Yeah. From the era.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and that's true too. They're definitely looking, there's a lot of Spanish influences, as in Spain. And so they're trying to bring that in. And I loved that.
Mm-hmm.
So he wakes a sleeping giant. He wins this fight, but he sees that everybody's still there to applaud him. So he comes back and he says, "Oh, we want more. Okay, how about a song?" And then all of a sudden the bell falls on him. Kind of a la Ernesto de la Cruz from Coco.
Yeah.
And I was like, was that a callback, or is this just a trope that I've never like paid attention to? Mm-hmm. The bell killing off main characters. I don't know. But he did die. He ended his eighth life.
Yeah, which he had really taken for granted up until that point. You know, like, yeah, I got more. And sure, yeah, if you have continual lives, you can live on the edge, you can live on the wild side. But then when you're down to your last one, that's it. He really has mm-hmm. this existential crisis, if you will, where he's figuring out what he wants to do, how he's going to survive. He really kind of becomes a shell of himself, and he goes inward, because now he's very protective of himself in that last life. And he comes and he meets this wolf character who's aware of this, and, you know, immediately targets him for that. And so he's constantly on the run trying to protect his last life, which normally is not him. You know, normally he's on the offensive, and the whole right. movie, it seems like he's on the defensive and he's trying to save what was lost.
All of his decisions are made out of fear, mm-hmm. fear of, you know, this bounty hunter that every other person he's been able to defeat in a moment, but this wolf, mm-hmm. Lobo, he's not able to defeat him at first. And so
I loved his character. Mm-hmm. I thought his design was so cool, you know, just very, you know, stylized. Then you have that painterly feel on top of it, but just those red eyes mm-hmm. and those two scythes that he carries around.
Yeah.
It's very scary. And then when you realize who he is later, that he is basically death, uh-huh. it makes a whole lot of sense. And just what a great villain. And there's quite a few villains in this movie, which is interesting, you know, that there's actually three main antagonists that keep Puss on his toes.
Yeah, there are. There's quite a bit that happens through this time. I think that setup was very needed. And something that I really appreciated about this movie is that all of the elements of story were there and were set up meticulously and with intention. And I feel like there's been a lot of movies I haven't seen that. And I was like, oh, wow, good job, story people. Mm-hmm. At the very end, I was like, oh, head of story, good job. You did a great job with this.
Yeah. And so it takes a while for us to really get going. Like you say, there's just a lot of hoops we have to jump through to really set up the stage. And I think sometimes it feels a little bit slow, you know, where he basically has this funeral to Puss in Boots, the character, and puts him to rest and then says, okay, well, I'm just gonna, you know, spend the rest of my days here at this little cat sanctuary, just being a cat. And it's sad to see him become the shell of his former self, where he is just a lap cat. And it's
and not even that, like, he's just one of the thousand.
It's pathetic, really.
One of my friends, she was like, I'm a really big cat person, and so I felt like they should have spent more time there. And I was like, oh no, I was good.
Oh, like, I thought they spent a little too much time there.
I agree.
I was like, I got it. Okay. I feel like I needed a good montage during that time. Like, let's throw a song in there, montage, speed it up. So I understand that, okay, like a year has passed or X amount of time. I didn't need to sit there and hang out to see that, like, yeah, it sucks and he's pathetic. Okay. Uh-huh. I could have figured that out very quickly, you know, as the progression of his beard is growing over time. Sure. He should have done that. Right. You know, we meet his new little friend, Perito. No, is it? Yeah, Perito.
Perito is what he ends up calling him.
Oh, yeah.
First, he's just the dog.
Yes.
Or the dog trying to pretend to be a cat in order to get food.
And he's okay.
Perito, he was a little annoying at the very first. I was like, okay, you're doing a good job of being the annoying mm-hmm. friend thing. And I understand why Puss does not like you. As the movie progresses and you get more of his story and the fact that he's just this happy little dude, but he's had like the worst time with people, and not just people, but like all of his litter mates basically tried to drown him in a rock and everything. But he's like, but hey, they did not know that I was the one that ended up with a new sweater. So win-win. And everyone's like, no, they tried to kill you, dog. Like, what? As a character, I felt like he was obviously very needed because he was the only one who's had it probably worse than everybody. And yet he's still happy and he's just enjoying the fact that he has friends and kind of adopting friends, not even having friends. Like, he's just saying, you shall be my squishy and you shall be mine. Come here, squishy. You know, it's like, I've had people like that in my life and I've always very much appreciated it, especially when I've had times in my life where I've been maybe less social. Last summer, I had a friend who was from Brazil. She didn't speak any English, and she came and through like a common friend, she like called me or sent me a message on Instagram. It was like, hi, I'm visiting for the next month or so in Mesa, but I don't know anybody. Can we be friends? And I was like,
Sure. Okay.
That's bold. So,
it is. But I go over to her house and she like opens the door and gives me this giant hug. And it's like, I'm so happy to meet you. And I'm just like, I have a new friend. Okay. And we hung out and we did stuff. And so like people that have that ability to even without having the guarantee that that their desires are going to be returned in full, they're still able to put themselves out there that much. I highly appreciate it. Mm-hmm. So in that way, I really liked him. And so he's very much needed as far as a counter to all of the other characters who have a definite goal, but seem to have everything. And I think that's the main theme of this is the people who have everything and yet feel that they need more. And he's the only one that had nothing and was content.
Mm-hmm.
And like showing gratitude over something, over anything else.
Yeah.
And I liked that.
So one of the things that we get is in classic Shrek fashion, you know, they're taking these fairy tales and they're flipping them on their heads. And of course, this is a Puss in Boots film within the Shrek universe. And so there's a few favorites that you see here and there, but they don't really take center stage. You know, this is Shrek doesn't make an appearance. You know, we don't see very many familiar characters. We're introduced to new fairy tales, which is, I think, pretty cool. The mm-hmm. main ones are basically Goldilocks and the Three Bears and then Little Jack Horner, mm-hmm. which was an interesting one. And so funny because my son, you know, every quarter in school, they have to recite a poem. And one of the ones he did was Little Jack Horner. So I'm very, very familiar. Little Jack Horner sat in his corner eating, you know. So the way that they flipped him and turned him into a villain and it was Big Jack Horner. It was great. I thought he was pretty good.
He kind of gave me like Kingpin vibes from Spider-Man.
He was kind of gross, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like wouldn't want to hang around.
They threw in the ethical bug as opposed to a Jiminy Cricket, you know? I'm just the ethical bug.
Yeah, so
and
funny.
He's voiced by Kevin McCann, but he's Kevin McCann doing a Jimmy Stewart impression from It's a Wonderful Life. And I like it. I mean, he's basically the counter to Jack Horner because he's always on his. He's like, no, I sit on your shoulder and I help you make ethical decisions. And he's just like, yeah, I'll just kill these people. It's fine. I feel like you don't know the value of life.
Yeah.
That was great.
And I like how also, I mean, they really turn because Goldilocks was never a villain to Puss. She was more of a
antagonist
just
getting
yeah.
in the way because they were both kind of going after the same goal.
Yeah. And they also wanted to, they had the same goal, but she also wanted to hire him to help steal the map. So at first it was like, we have a proposition for you. So wanting to add him to her group, but instead they ended up being on separate groups going to the same thing. And I, out of all of the character developments, hers was actually my favorite because I actually cried at the end. I was like, aw, Goldie.
Cute.
And I remember how they were setting this whole thing up. And at the very, when she finally gets the map, like they, well, at the very beginning, she's like, I'm going to get our wishes and everything's going to be better. And we're going to have a family crime ring. And you could tell that the bears were all into the family thing, but she kind of wasn't. And then when they get to their old home, the mama bear coming in and being like, and that's when we found you and everything became just right. And I was like,
aw, that's so sweet. Yeah.
And so I could tell that they were building that up, but I wasn't exactly sure what they were building it up to because the map would change based on the person who was looking at it. And it would kind of, I think it was meant to kind of help each person decide that their life was fine the way it was or how to get their actual wish, like, because it would actually read what their wish was. And so for her, it just took her back to nostalgia and into their old house. And now all the bears are all happy because they're like, oh, we're home. Good.
Yeah.
And then you, when it goes over to Puss, he gets sent into the Cave of Lost Souls.
Mm-hmm.
And where he gets to meet all of his former lives, which I thought was funny. I was a fan. Especially when, for whatever reason, I was like, that bodybuilder one, was that the one after Shrek 5 or Shrek 4? Where he's just like super fat cat?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this was a portion of the film where I saw parts.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so he ends up talking, he sees all of these past versions of himself, and so all eight of his lives are there talking to him, and hey, remember, you can be us, like, aren't you so glad you can have your more lives back, and so you can be us again. And it's definitely the more self-centered version of him, and as this whole thing has gone, we've noticed that he used to have a love with Kitty Softpaws. And so now he's kind of going back and go with her and trying to decide what to do as far as their relationship. And I just felt like I don't want to go through every little plot point of this because I just feel like that's a lot, but every little plot point was used and was needed in order to give a full arc on both Goldie and Puss and even Kitty. And Jack Horner, you know, he stays a horrible person. And I liked that.
Yeah.
He's the only one where he's like, oh, I had the worst life. I had parents who loved me and took care of me. And then also they gave me a thriving baker's fortune that but I don't have all the magic and I want it all for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I really appreciated it. And so when they finally get to that last part where he is in the Cave of Souls and he meets up with the Lobo again, and then he is like, oh no, I was doing so well with my friends, you know, team friendship. Then he sees the Lobo again. And so he just starts running and he ends going back to fear, which is a key point in having the trust element with Kitty.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to the star. He's about to make his wish and he is, you know, having to make that decision again. And he gets encircled by flames with Lobo coming after him. Mm-hmm. And then his transition right there, where Lobo's like, are all of your lives flashing before your life? When it's really this life that is flashing before his life, not the yeah. the others. And so he gets the courage to stand up for this life and saying, no, this is the one I want to keep. And I think also, you know, the Perito was like, oh, I've only ever had one life. But, you know, at least I have you guys. So that makes everything worth it. You know, it's just like doubling down on this life is what matters and not other chances. And as far as like messages from a movie, I'm like, I can 100% get behind this. I like it.
So, I mean, what about the music?
The music, I felt like it was very well done as far as the score. I felt like it enhanced where it needed to and kind of was down where it also let things kind of breathe. But then also the addition to different Spanish songs were really great. I loved that. It was just, it really doubled down on the location and background of the main character being in Spain. So I felt like it was very appropriate.
Yeah.
And I would not have liked it if they didn't. I would have thought like, that's a lost. There's so much music that you could have put in there. And they ended up did. They found some really great songs and great singers.
Yeah, you know, I don't really recall any being particularly moved by the soundtrack or the songs. I remember that first one they were singing about basically his theme song. You know, so I don't know if that's a hit or miss. Sometimes it really takes a lot for me to really pay attention.
Yeah.
To, you know, whether it's a great soundtrack or not, you know, I think that is the sign of a good, well, it could be a good or a bad, you know, the soundtrack for me, I'm not sitting there listening to the soundtrack. It's just part of the movie.
Yeah. I'm looking at the soundtrack right now. His song was actually quite catchy. I liked it. The therapy dog, since I liked, he was cute. I mean, The more I go back and talk about these different characters, the more I'm like, oh, yeah, they did a good job with these. So I'm a fan. The score was done by Hector Pereira.
Don't Hector, do it.
Hector Pereira. Hector Pereira.
It's like you either have to do it like 100% perfect every time, or just don't even try.
Just don't even try. Yeah. It's harder too, because like I'm also kind of translating from Portuguese.
Which is not
how it's done.
Yeah.
and I know that's not how it's done. I'm just used to it. So I'm like, I'm going to mess you up all whatever I do. So I'm just going to not. Anyway, there's not a lot else to say without going through plot by plot, mm-hmm. plot point by plot point. And so I feel like we're good to just kind of rate it where you think.
Yeah. What would you rate it?
I would give this a solid 4 stars. It was very, the more I think about all the plot points and how they kind of built it up and kind of brought it together, the more I appreciate each character. And also, like, it got me to cry at the end. So obviously you're going to get it up higher. And the whole thing, I just felt it was like a good movie. I think because of how kind of all the plot points and all the kind of moving around, it's going to be harder for me to remember as time goes on. But mm-hmm. It's one that I'm like, I believe I'll look back and be like, oh yeah, I liked that movie. Mm-hmm. So 4 stars.
Yeah. I think I'm going to give it 3.5 stars, and with a huge asterisk, because I feel like my viewing experience was really tainted. You know, there's so much buildup at the beginning of this movie leading to this kind of like ending scene. And once they kind of get to the dark forest, halfway through, that is when I get distracted, not on my own account, but because of others around me, literally running around, running amok. Mm-hmm. So I had to take care of that situation. And so I feel like I really missed out on connecting with the movie during that critical portion, the final act.
Right, right.
Which was kind of a bummer for me, but it is what it is. And that was my life. And, you know, I wasn't planning on reviewing it, but here I am. I liked enough of it, but I still felt like the part that I did see and focus on the beginning was a little slow. I liked certain parts of it, but like the whole cat sanctuary just didn't do it for me for some reason. Like that mm-hmm. to me was kind of a low point, even though according to your friend, that was a high point, which is interesting.
And it's also supposed to be the low point.
Oh, for sure. Him. And I'm not, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's a low point because it's a low point for Puss or in the movie. It's just, they spend too much time there.
Yeah.
And I just don't dig it. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's too many cats or what, where I'm like, okay, let's yada yada this.
Right.
It seems obvious to me that he was going to eventually take back the Puss in Boots, you know, persona and get back into mm-hmm. it. So it seemed kind of inevitable. But one thing that I will say is I loved the art style. I loved the action scenes, you know, with the jump cut, not jump cut, but the reduced frame rate. Mm-hmm. It just felt cool and different. And at the same time, I wonder how many more movies like this until it feels really old and we'll look back and it's like so dated. It's like, oh, all mm-hmm. the movies were doing that back in the early 2020s, right?
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how this ages. Would like to see it again. But I'm really, really happy that this is done really well. It's going, you know, just went into its fourth weekend. And even though it's now available to rent, it's still doing phenomenally well, which I'm mm-hmm. excited for. And, you know, I want these movies to succeed. And I think at this point, would you say it's taking a risk to put out a 6th film in a franchise or a sequel from a movie 10 years ago?
Well, the thing is, they didn't go back to they only very slightly touched on Shrek. Mm-hmm. Like you had Gingy in there for a brief second mm-hmm. but that's about it. Like, and then at the very, very end, we're like, new adventures and some old friends as they mm-hmm. go and mm-hmm. they land in far, far away. So I don't think so. I think it's more like, I don't know. It just, they really tried to keep it as just a Puss in Boots film. So, and there's only really been one of those, so it doesn't feel necessarily like it's part of the Shrek world.
Yeah.
I would actually like to share some of the patrons' reviews. So Jack Song got on and he said, I had to drag myself to Puss in Boots, the last wish. My goodness, this movie had no right to be that amazing. I can't believe nobody is talking about this movie. It's incredible and probably has my favorite animated villain I've seen in a while. I'm honestly surprised and enthusiastic how enthusiastic I came out of this. Jonathan North says, I'm literally just leaving the theater now. It is amazing. I wasn't even going to go see it until I started hearing all of the positive buzz. I'm so glad I decided to go. Rachel Wagner said, it was my favorite movie of 2022. Yeah. And so we just had so much positive buzz coming out of this movie, out of our patron community. So we'd love to hear more about it. If you also like to join with the patrons on New Year's Eve, I was sick and was not able to go out. So I just said, yo, anybody want to hang out? And so we just got to hang out for like 3 hours with a couple people from the patron group. So join us. Definitely. We'd love to have more people to hang out with.
That's all we have for today. Until next time,
we are the Rotoscopers. Pick something.
I don't have that. I don't know.
The cat house. I will say, I told my friend, I was like, yeah, when I was turned 30, I basically decided that I was either going to get a dog or get my crazy cat lady starter kit, which is basically just a pregnant cat, and make that my life. And she was like, is that the crazy cat lady starter kit? Just a pregnant cat? I'm like, to me, yes. This will be my life.
Don't do it, Chelsea. Don't do it.
Well, I decided to go for the dog just because I needed somebody to go running with me. So
nice.
You've been listening to the Animation Addicts podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you want to help spread the word, be sure to share the podcast with your friends on social media. Just don't forget to tag us at Rotoscopers on Instagram and use the hashtag AnimationAddicts. For all the links and full show notes for this episode, go to rotoscopers.com/podcast. Now, if you still can't get enough for your animation fix, be sure to subscribe to us on YouTube and visit rotoscopers.com for more animation news, reviews, and interviews. Thanks for listening.